Hello?
Hello, is John there, please?
It's John, yeah.
Hi, John. It's Don Cassidy with Delicious Saggerty, Progressive Rock Radio. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us today. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Of course, I'm speaking with, I have the honor of speaking with, a true legend in the world of progressive rock, Mr. John Wetton. And John, maybe we can just kind of talk right now, starting off with that, maybe what you're up to right now. I know I read a while back that you were looking to release an album maybe later on this year or 2005. Is there any projects right now that you're currently working on that we can talk about?
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm writing. That sounds like a cliche when it comes from a writer, because it means they're basically sort of not happening at all. But in fact, I was just like really kind of musically stuck.
Okay.
Up until about a month ago.
Okay.
And then it's all started flowing, and I've got, you know, 9 or 10 songs.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I am basically in business.
Right. Great.
Lovely.
Now, your last studio album that you released was called Rock of Faith,
yeah,
which was in 2003, which is an excellent album.
Thank you.
Yeah, really, I just thought a tremendous job on that one. Can you talk a little bit about that album?
Sure, yes. Again, as usual, I didn't know where I was going. I was just sort of fiddling about for about, I don't know, a month or something. And then it just gradually started creeping back in, you know. If I finish a project,
mm-hmm.
I feel, you know, creatively, totally out of it, you know. it's all gone.
Right, right.
It's all gone. And I think, this has happened every time I made a record, you know. I think, I'm never going to write another song again. And then gradually, it just starts creeping back in.
Right.
And the same thing happened with that one. What I did with Rock of Faith was used a new recording technique, well, for me, anyway, which was Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. You know all about that. Well, the technique we used and the people we used were fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And so, that's probably why it sounds so good.
It sounds excellent.
Yeah, it does sound good.
It really is a very well done album. Now, I guess you had the opportunity to write and record a little bit with an old friend of yours, Jeff Downs, on that album, too. You wrote two songs with him on Rock of Faith, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
How did it feel again to kind of be working with Jeff?
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, we've never had a problem.
No, I know you guys have been, go back a long ways, right?
We go back a long ways, and the other thing is that his daughter is my goddaughter.
Oh, is that right?
Hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And she's now 19 or 20, I think, and she's very close to my heart.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know
In
that.
Fact, I wrote a song about her, called Christina.
Oh, okay.
Which is on a live album, I think.
The Rock of Faith, again, when I listened to it, again, for someone who's been in the music business for a long time, you know, your voice, I think your vocals on an album are just unbelievable. I mean, how well your voice has really, you know, sounds, and how well it's, you know, really held up over the years. Let's be honest about it. You know, you've been in a lot of bands and been around a long time. You know, have you done anything, you know, over the years to kind of keep your voice sounding as good as it still sounds now?
Yeah, I stopped smoking.
That helps, right?
Big time.
That helps.
But I stopped smoking 12 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
And I haven't touched one since.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, that worked a treat.
Okay.
Yeah. I used to get terrible trouble. I mean, I'm still, you know, when I play shows, I'm on and off. I'm sort of really, really good one night. And then the next night I might be a little bit sort of peaky, you know.
Right.
But in general, yeah, for recording purposes, the voice is holding up pretty well. Touch wood.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Knock on wood.
Because, you know, unfortunately not everybody is that lucky. You know,
yeah, I know.
And you really, I mean, again, when I listened to that album, that was the one thing that grabbed me right off the bat was just how strong your voice sounds. So,
well, it is very strong at the moment, yeah.
That's good to hear. Now, yeah. I read something
but
that...
Just me and Glenn Hughes was still in the... In the running.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, Glenn Hughes, yeah, absolutely.
Right, I have the golden bollocks, but he has the voice from the devil's bottom. And he wouldn't mind me saying that.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't take that personally, right?
Yes, he would, but he'd take it from me.
Okay.
I have the sophomore. We've worked on several projects together.
Right.
And I have the sort of soft, intimate voice, and he has the, you know, the voice from hell.
Right.
But I love him.
Yeah. I read something that you were a fan, and this is a band that we like a lot, of Heather Finley of Mostly Autumn. And
I'm a big fan of her, yeah.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people are, honestly. But
yeah, she's got the best off of anyone.
Yeah, you actually wrote a song, I guess? Or you did you perform?
I've got a song that we were supposed to do together, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you actually kind of wrote it for her voice, right?
I did, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
She's got a tremendous voice.
She has a gorgeous butt as well.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Which would stop traffic, but, you know, so yeah.
That's true. But we love Mostly Autumn. Yeah, it's one of our favorite bands.
Oh, great.
I was glad.
Yeah, they're a lovely band.
They really are.
Very nice people.
Very nice.
But yeah, Heather's stayed at my house a couple of times, and we talked about doing a duet.
Wow.
I think it would be lovely.
I think it would be amazing. I think your voice and her voice would actually go well, very well together.
They would blend very well.
They would blend very well together. So that would be something interesting, I think, to hear.
Yeah, she's a lovely person.
Right.
She really is.
John has a great website at www.johnwetton.com. And isn't it amazing now, the internet age, that the fans can come to your website? I even see you have something on your website now where your fans can email you some questions.
Well, I get them via my webmaster.
Right, right.
And she is in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Even though it says UK.
Right.
She's located in Philadelphia. And she's been my sort of right-hand person for the best part of 10 years. And she just sorts through everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes through, she will send it through to me on private email. I very rarely get involved in the actual website itself.
Right, right.
Because I leave that to her.
Yeah, I understand. That's usually the case. You know, but it's kind of neat that in these days that you're able to get an email and communicate with your fans that way. That's a really nice way for musicians, I think, as yourself, to have some interaction with the fans that you probably wouldn't have been able to have in the past.
Sure, I've made a lot of friends that way,
Right.
I have an awful lot of friends that I've met through my website, and all I do is I get. Him to vet them because, they can be a bit dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
If you get the wrong ones.
No, I understand.
So I just get Kim to vet them and then I don't mind even if they have my private email,
Right.
But I like talking to intelligent people,
Sure.
It's a very good thing, Of course, it has its downsides as well, but the nasties can get to you as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, but, again, it's you know, for your fans that really enjoy you, I know you have a very supportive fan group on there. It does give them a nice option to be able to communicate with you, which is something, you know, obviously 10 years ago in the music business that probably wouldn't have happened. So it's I think it sets up a nice situation in most cases, I'm sure.
In 99.9% of cases,
right.
It's really pleasant and it's lovely, and I've made some really good friends.
Right.
And just in a couple of cases, it's been a little bit obscure. You know?
Yeah.
But mostly it's been great. Yeah.
Great.
Lovely.
Now,
I really appreciate the job that Kim's doing as well. She does a fantastic job.
Yeah, it is a really great. I was looking at it a lot the other day. It really is a very. She has done a nice job. It's a great website.
Yeah, it is.
It's got a lot of information on it, and really, you know, tells everything that you need to know about John Wetton. So you can check that out at www.johnwetton.com. John, on your website, and again, there's some nice releases that the fans can purchase by going to your website. There was two of them I saw, and one of them, excuse me, was your, I guess, your live show on XM Radio that you did in 2002.
Yeah.
That's a CD and a DVD that the fans can...
It's a DVD, yeah.
...can pick up, okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the 2002 John Wetton Fan Convention, which can be purchased on DVD.
Yeah.
Would you be thinking about doing another fan convention in the future?
In the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the first one was, the United States, right? The first fan convention you had?
Yeah, in Allentown, yeah.
Right, Pennsylvania.
And we're living here in Allentown. it would probably be in the same place.
Okay. How did you like that experience, having that? The fan convention.
It's just incredible being in a hotel
full
of people who love your music.
It's kind of nice, huh?
Yep.
And I know, I guess at the first fan convention that you had, Jeff Downs was actually there too, right? He was.
Yeah, because I loved him too.
And I also see that you play and have played in the past with John Young.
Yeah, I guess John Young and I always do a song together.
Who's another person we've interviewed and we like a lot here at the station.
There you go.
Young band, a very good person. So
He's lovely. Yeah, we've known each other for 8 years, you know. And we've been working together. I mean, practically every record I make is a joint collaboration.
Right.
John Young.
Yeah, he's been very involved with you in recent years. I've seen that. I also see that I guess they're planning, or Universal's planning to release a DVD with some of the Asia videos from the classic lineup.
Yeah.
Is that going to be coming out soon?
I believe so. I believe in July, I think. That's the last thing I heard.
Okay, so
I just okayed everything.
Good.
One question remains in my mind. Why didn't they put Go on there?
Go's not on there. Oh, boy.
No.
Okay.
And I don't understand why not. But maybe I'll get to the bottom of it.
Yeah,
as the actress said to the bishop.
I think that's one the fans would want to see, too.
I think so. I don't understand why they've left it off. Quite honestly, you know, the last 4 or 5 releases have been DVDs in my household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got Live in Poland, I've got Live in Moscow,
right.
I've got Live in the Underworld.
Right.
You know, there's about 4 or 5.
Right.
And they're all DVDs, and they've all got extra...
Bonus footage, right?
Bonus information.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't understand why. I don't quite understand. I've been waiting for this to come out for years now,
mm-hmm.
from Universal.
Mm-hmm. almost surprised it's taken so long. You would think that...
It has taken an awful long time.
Yeah, I mean, the world of DVDs, you know, with all the stuff that's not... You would think the Asia videos would have been available by now on DVD.
You would think so.
You know?
Yeah, you would think so.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. And the fact that they've left something off there, which is barely valuable...
Right.
And they haven't put any extra footage on it. It is a bit worrying. I don't know why that is. I'm not arguing with it because I want it to come out.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you think that it probably could have been a little better.
Well, there's lots of MTV footage, put it that way.
Okay.
All it would have needed, because I said to them at Universal, there's some lovely stuff on MTV,
right.
You know, there's some walk-on interviews, guest DJs.
Yeah, I mean, in the early days of MTV, you guys were very big.
Yeah.
You were very involved with the early days of MTV.
That's right.
Because the timing was right for what Asia was doing and what MTV was doing, and I'm sure there was a lot of footage from that.
Well, so I mentioned that to... to Universal, and they said we don't have time to do that.
Maybe they'll put out a second one.
Where that went and where Go went, well, Go is gone.
right.
I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea. You know, you're talking to suits, you know.
Right, I understand. That's the frustration.
People in suits, and they've got their own agenda, and they don't share it with you, you know?
Right. No, I understand. Maybe we'll go backwards a little bit, if you don't mind, because, again, John, you've been involved in, when it comes to progressive rock and everything, the amount of projects and the amount of great bands that you've played with over the years is really mind-boggling, if you think about it. Very important person in the history of progressive rock. And obviously one of the bands, of your many bands that you've had an impact on progressive rock with, was, mid-70s lineup of King Crimson.
Yeah.
Which put out three incredible albums, Snarks, Tongues, and Aspects, Starless, and Red, which are all really considered classics at this point, and led to some amazing live concerts. From that period of King Crimson that you were involved with the band, do you have a favorite album out of those albums?
Oh, yeah, Red.
You like Red? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Red was in my automatic choice.
Okay.
Yeah, it summed up everything we were about.
Okay.
You know?
That's funny.
It had the aggression.
Yeah, I think the fans would agree with that, too.
I think so, yeah. It was the result of 3 years, practically, touring all the time, you know.
Right.
Months at a time. And we honed it down. That was one of the very few albums that I did where we rehearsed it on the road.
Right.
And then went into the studio.
Right.
Now, Red was the end of that. It was the culmination of a long, long time on the road.
Right.
And for me, I thought it was the best thing we ever did.
Right. Yeah.
Lots of people think Larkstone's was great because, you know, we'd never been in the studio before, and we'd never been on the road with it. I think Red just sounds like so fucking confident.
I would agree with that. That's my favorite all-time King Crimson album by any of the lineups is Red, too.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of, if you asked a lot of King Crimson fans, I think a lot of people would say that. It's just there's something about
it's
that
just
album.
Everything about it is confident, you know.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. John, there's been, you know, again, there's a lot of interesting takes that have been given on Robert Fripp over the years. You know, he really is, a legend in the business. There's no doubt about it. How did you like working with Robert Fripp?
You have to remember that we've known each other since we were 15.
Okay, right. Right?
Right. We've known each other since we were little nippers. So he can't, doesn't pull any pranks on me, and I don't do the same to him. You know, we are very, very straight, honest engine.
Okay.
We are. I've never had a problem working with Robert.
Okay.
He's a lovely guy to work with.
Okay.
I love him. You know. It really isn't a problem.
Okay.
For me. There are very few people that are a problem. No, Robert certainly isn't one of them.
Okay.
We had tea a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We had tea. We often talk about having coffee and cappuccinos and tea and stuff, you know, because that's what we used to do.
Right.
And he lives in Nashville now.
Right.
I don't. But it doesn't stop us being friends.
Sure.
You know? So we speak, we email, and, you know, whenever we can. But the most of the people that I keep in contact with, I've known for probably 40 years.
Right.
And Robert Fripp falls into that category. You know, I've known him for now over 40 years.
Right. When, you know, after the Red Album and after, you know, that lineup of King Crimson kind of, you know, disbanded back in the 70s, I mean, were you surprised that was the end of that lineup of King Crimson? Did you think it could have went further, or was it just kind of something that didn't really surprise you at that time?
It could have gone further.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill and I were very, very disappointed.
Okay. So really it was Robert's decision.
Yeah, he just retreated.
Okay.
Completely.
Hmm.
And,
after,
yeah.
It's interesting, because after probably making the best album King Crimson ever made, in Red.
Nobody believed in it at the time.
Okay.
Nobody. I had to go on the road and promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying at the time, if nobody else believes in it, I would go out and do it.
Right.
You know? And I had to go out, travel around the country and do radio stations, you know, interviews and stuff. And just say, yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
And now, you know, 20 years later, everyone thinks it's bloody marvelous.
Yeah, but it's kind of amazing, isn't it, at the time?
Yeah.
Wasn't getting the recognition, and now everybody looks back on this, and it's, you know, when they talk about the greatest albums of progressive rock, Red is always listed right at the top.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's
interesting. And even Kurt Cobain said that he was in, you know, his top three.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
know, and...
Oh, it's in
Florida. Okay, that gives us a lot of cred, you know.
Right. But Red, I think Red, the album Red itself, you know, even outside the confines of progressive rock, has influenced a lot of your more modern, you know, even some of your modern sounding bands that aren't even progressive rock bands have been very influenced by that period of King Crimson, and particularly that album, I think.
Yeah, there's a Japanese rock band called Starless.
Right.
So, yes, it was very influential, yeah. At the time, though, it was like flogging a dead horse, you know.
Right.
I couldn't get it arrested.
It's hard to believe it, you know, when you think back on it, though. It's hard to imagine that, but, you know, I know that that's happened with some other great albums, too, in the past with other bands. You know, old years later, you look back on how wonderful it is, but at the time, it was...
It's flogging a dead horse.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's a shame.
Well, yes, but as I say, you know, as they say, all good things come to those who wait.
Right, right. Patience, right?
Patience is a virtue.
That's right. Especially.
And it certainly worked with that one.
Especially in the music business.
It suddenly kind of came to life about 10 years ago.
Right.
And I think it was when it was reissued.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, those who know how good it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. Not everything is great on it, but. look at Lifetime Aspect, and it sounds like we're just dipping our toes in the water.
Right.
You know? By the time we got to Red, we'd been on the road for nearly 2 years.
Right.
And, okay, we made one album in between, Stars and Bible Black, which was, okay, putting your foot into the water.
Right, right.
Rather than putting your toes into the water.
Right.
But then we hit Red, and I just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I still play loads of stuff from that on stage.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
And it goes down, well, say ecstatically would be undermining the word ecstatic. There are people who just, you know, fall over.
Right.
There's one woman in concert in Poland, and I saw her from the, you can see most things from the stage, you know, and she just cried her eyes out.
Wow.
All the way through.
To show the effect that's had on people. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That must make you feel good.
And I said, well, how does it make me feel? I said, hey, it can't be that bad.
Yeah. That's funny. But it's amazing how it can touch people like that, even, you know, all these years later playing it.
Yeah, well, you get used to it on stage, you know.
Right.
So it ends up being half musician, half stand-up comic, you know.
Right. I'm sure. I'm sure. Now, after King Crimson, obviously you spent some time with Roxy Music, Uriah Heep, and then you formed, you were involved with forming the band UK in the...
Yeah, when I was on tour with Roxy.
Right.
In Australia, it was. And there was a DJ who said... So what happened to King Crimson? I told him.
Right.
And he said, so what's stopping you from doing that again?
Right.
And he said, actually nothing.
Right.
I can do that anytime I like.
Right.
So, I wrote to Bill from Melbourne. And we agreed to get together and start working on something. I got some material, and that turns out to be the sort of basis of the first UK album. Then we had to find the two other players, and I always think four players is the best result. You know? It always ends up being three players. We always get rid of one. But I just said to him, okay, well, you choose who you want to work with, and I'll choose who I want to work with.
Right.
So I chose Eddie Jobson. And he chose Alan Holzer.
Right. And again, you know,
the first time we got into a studio together, well, we rehearsed for an afternoon in South London. And I just thought, Jesus, this guy is fucking phenomenal. Just outrageous.
Right.
Oh, nice choice, Bill. And he turned out to be that, yeah.
Right. I guess.
But if you put a spotlight on him, he'll run away.
Yeah, I know.
You know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But UK, again, when we talk about a just like that lineup of King Crimson we spoke about, first of all, to have a band with Bill Bruford, Alan Holdsworth, yourself, Eddie Jobson, I mean, these are people that all are legendary players now that are in one band together. And I know Terry Bozzio got involved too. But, I mean, the impact that UK has had on progressive rock, again, all these years later, people are still, you know, raving about those few albums that you guys made back in the late
70s. Yeah, well, you know, they were pretty good.
They're very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So, you know, in addition to the King Crimson period that you were in, UK is influenced a lot of people too over the years.
Well, I'm very pleased that it did. You know, it was always meant to. You know?
Right.
It was always meant to sink in.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't involving Robert, but you kind of mentioned that. I mean, was that kind of an extension of you know, what you and Bill were doing in King Crimson at that time?
Yeah.
Is that what
yeah.
UK really can be thought as?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Now, I think what we achieved with Asia came a little bit later.
Yeah.
About 82, 81, 82.
Sure.
Had more form than,
right.
Than UK. In fact, you know, it was that I actually got my ideas together. I got my shit together. by that time, I knew exactly what I was doing.
Right.
And I was extremely confident. Without that, the first Asia record would never have happened.
Right, right. It was an evolution towards where you went through to get to where Asia was, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, there was a downside to everything.
Right.
And where Jeff and I knew exactly what we were doing, and we had exactly the right producer. The other factors involved didn't really believe it. And we had to fight quite hard to get everything going.
Right.
It was difficult. It was never easy.
Right. But I mean, the term supergroup gets thrown around a lot. I guess UK was really a supergroup too, if you think about it, but the term supergroup gets thrown around. Asia was really, you know, the quintessential supergroup back then. I mean, to put members of Yes and you know, Emerson, Lincoln, Palmer and King Crimson together all in one band was really a pretty amazing feat for the early 80s.
There was never an expression that we used.
You guys,
we never thought of ourselves.
No, everyone else did.
You've got to remember that London was a village,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the 70s.
Right.
Late 60s, early 70s, and we all knew each other.
Okay.
So, it wasn't a big deal
right.
for me to meet Steve Howe or Carl Palmer, because right. we already knew each other.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that to be flippant,
mm-hmm.
or I'm not down-talking on anybody. It just, that's the way it was.
No, I understand.
You know? We used to bump into each other at the office all the time.
Right.
And so it wasn't really that likely that you know, we'd be afraid of working with each other. And when I remember at the time, people would say, oh, what's it like working with Robert Fripp? I've known him since I was 15 years old.
Right, right.
Oh, so what's it like working with Carl Palmer? Well, I've known him since I was 18 years old.
Right. It's a now, small fraternity. It really, you know, it's a...
It's a tiny little village, you know.
Right, everybody knew each other anyway.
London in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
A tiny little village.
Right.
Everybody knew each other. I mean, the number of people that I know to speak to on the phone, I've known for probably... upwards of 35 years.
Right.
So, it's nothing unusual
right.
for me to speak to Chris Squire or to Ian Anderson, you know.
Right.
I've known them all most of my life.
Right. Well, I mean, timing is, I guess timing, especially in music, is everything. And again, with that lineup of Asia, and you guys all knew each other anyway. You know, was you know, Steve was done with Yes at that point, and you know, ELP wasn't together anymore, and it just probably felt like a natural progression for all you guys.
Yeah, when we first got together, it was me and Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as Jeff came in, the axis changed.
Right.
Suddenly became Wet and Down, you know.
Right.
And oh, thank God, you know.
Right.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think there's been a faster selling debut album.
Yeah.
In history.
Right, absolutely.
Considering it was kind of prog. You know, everybody knocks Heat of the Moment, but analyze it. Well, in Hollywood terms, analyze this.
Well, Heat of the Moment is, I mean, that's...
Okay. It's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, but it's an incredible song.
It is.
I mean, it's an incredible song. That's all there is to it. It's an incredible song, and it's got a memorable. You know, there's nothing. I mean, I'm a aggressive rock fan, and there's nothing negative I can possibly say about either moment. And I can say the same for most of that, almost everything on that album too.
Yeah, well, you know, we got a fair amount of criticism for that, but. Without it, you know, I wouldn't be living in this house.
No, that's understandable.
No, without it, you know. Okay, try and analyze it. Look at the sheet music, the Heat of the Moment.
Mm-hmm.
It is not as simple as you think.
No, I'm sure it's not.
No, it's not. When you get to the middle eight, it's just ludicrous.
Right.
How complicated it is.
Right.
It's not simple. Okay, the chorus is simple, you know, it's three chords, but then all the best songs are three chords.
Right.
But I mean, it's in ridiculous chord, it's a ridiculous chord sequence in a very, very complicated time signature. And the lyrics are, to say the least, delirious.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't tell me that's a simple pop song.
Not even close.
Pardon?
That's not even close to a simple pop song, I don't think.
No, it's not.
Not
no.
Even close. So.
Yet, I was accused of writing Bubblegum.
No. I don't see Bubblegum on Heat at the Moment. I don't see it.
I don't think so.
No, not at all. But yeah. I mean, just think of when Asia, I mean, and all the concerts and everything that you guys did. I mean, that music, that album, the first couple Asia albums, especially. I mean, people loved it. I mean, you know, it's still to this day that music is played. So you know, I guess you're gonna get criticism, but it's very memorable and very important music.
Yeah. Well.
That's all there is to it.
I think so. And one thing that sticks in my memory is lying by a pool in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
when age was at its peak. We were playing Red Rocks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was lying next to this beautiful girl, and she was listening to our album.
Right.
On her Walkman. And I leaned over to her and said, "That's me, you know." And she just leaned back and said, "Fuck off."
That's a good pickup line, though.
Not for me, was it?
Not for you, was it? That's a great story. John, I this is obviously the inevitable question that you probably have heard 100 times. Could you ever see yourself, you know, one day or ever being in a band and calling yourself, you know, in Asia again?
Yeah.
You could see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I could do that.
Okay.
That actually would, for me, be the kind of the ultimate sort of, you know, way back, I guess.
Come full circle.
Yeah, for the time being, I'm well happy doing my solo albums and stuff.
Okay.
You know, Rock of Faith, to me, is just as satisfying as Asian One.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any... I agree with that 100%. I mean, it's great
it's
stuff.
Brilliant album. Actually, the vocal sound is better. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the songwriting is there. You know, I was a little bit upset that my wife and son were here at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But, she was upset that I'd used his image on the album. Why? Just, you know, that was exactly the album was about.
Right.
If she didn't realize that, then
okay. But it sounds like you wouldn't rule out ever possibly being involved with Asia again.
I would certainly not rule out ever being together with Jeff Downes again.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you consider it, that's Asia.
It gets complicated.
It does get complicated.
Right.
But, I certainly wouldn't rule out working with Jeff again.
Okay.
You know, you saw what we did on the last album together.
Absolutely.
Oh, I thought it was lovely.
Very.
Lovely. I mean, both of the songs that we co-wrote turned out fantastic, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, things have changed. Not really that much interest in prog rock in America.
It's hard. It's underground. You know, it really is. It's underground. And that's kind of why we're here. Keep the good music alive.
Yeah, that's all right by me. I don't mind that.
Okay.
You know, it's a lot healthier in Europe.
Right.
At least you can get a decent set of results, as they
say. John, can you hold on 1 second? I'm just flipping my tape, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Okay, we're back. Thanks, John.
Okay.
I guess, you know, looking at your work as a solo artist, you've done a lot of really, really good albums. I know this is a really hard question, but do you have an album, really, that you've done as a solo artist, John, that you're especially proud of?
All of them.
It's a good answer.
All of them, yeah. No doubt about it.
It's a good answer.
I don't ever put out anything that I believe in 20 million percent. It's all good stuff.
Good.
The moment I set out to make records,
right,
I made records that I would buy.
Right.
And that goes from family through to solo records. That they are records that I would buy. So if you buy Battle Lines, you're buying a record that I would buy.
Right.
I made it so that I would buy it. Anything that I've made, apart from sort of live albums and, you know, bootlegs, is stuff that I've made that I would buy. Okay?
Yeah, that's I think that's a great answer. It's a great answer.
It sounds like Family Fortunes.
You were involved in a project a couple of years ago, Wango, is that what it's called? Am I pronouncing that right? With Carl,
okay, yeah.
Carl Palmer and John Young. And I guess you guys released the live album, which is a little hard to obtain sometimes. How did that feel, playing with Carl Palmer again?
Carl and I, as I said, we've been friends since we were teenagers.
Yeah. It's a big deal to all of us. But to you guys, like you said, you've known these guys for so long, it's probably not that big of a deal.
No, it's not.
Yeah, to us, it's an amazing thing. Wow, John Wetton's playing with Carl Palmer again. You guys probably don't even think anything of it.
No, we don't. It's just it's one phone call.
Right.
And, suddenly we're playing again.
Right.
Actually, it's a little bit more involved than that. But, you know, if I wanted Carl to play on a record, he could be here this afternoon.
Right.
You know? So it really would not be a problem.
Okay.
As I say, it's a village.
Yeah.
And all the guys from the late 60s tend to know each other.
Right.
Like I know everybody in Yes. I know everybody in ELP.
Right.
We can all call on each other at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if Greg and I do the same job, so that probably would be a good idea. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. It's interesting. It's an interesting way to think again, because we look at it as this wow, how did they got to play together again, and since you guys have known each other so long, come from the same place, it's not as big as a deal as we think it is.
It's not really.
I mean, obviously you have to deal, you have to get through management and all that kind of red tape and record companies and all that. But other than that,
what you have to remember is that we come from the same club.
Right.
You know?
Right.
We grew up in the same culture.
Right.
If you like.
Right.
So, London, 1968, was this little village, really,
mm-hmm.
as far as we were concerned. We went from the Marquee to the
person.
I nearly blew it then.
No, <that's okay. laughs>
it went from Water Street to I'm trying to think what the name of the speakeasy. Yeah.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, Margaret Street.
Right.
Water Street, Margaret Street.
Right.
And a couple of restaurants in between.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's an interesting way to think about it now. When I think of you guys now, I think it now that you've mentioned, talked about how you guys all know each other in the small, it kind of makes you think of things a little differently now. When I see you.
Well, as being a village.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is.
Right.
And that's what it still is.
Right.
Because we're still keeping in contact.
Yeah.
I made a record of who I was speaking to about a month ago. Every one of them I'd known for over 40 years.
Wow.
Now, I'm not an old git. Well, I might be an old git.
No.
But, I don't have any grey hair or anything.
No.
But I've known these guys for over 40 years.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's amazing.
I think it is. Because it's almost like sort of graduation, isn't it?
Right. It's amazing.
You come into a club that accepts you. The two people I speak to most of all, almost every day, I've known for the best part of 50 years.
Right. It's amazing. Who was I supposed? I was talking to Rick Nelson.
Oh, Rick. Yeah.
Who's a great. He's really the one that made the contact that really. And then I dealt with Martin too. And Rick really said right off the bat, I was talking to him about you and Jeff and Downs and stuff, because we've spoken to Jeff Downs in the past also here. And he said you'd be surprised about how small of a group it really is, how everybody just knows everybody. He goes, I don't even remember how I met John or how I met, you know, Jeff, but it's just everybody just knows everybody kind of thing. And that's how he kind of spoke about, you know, the relationships between all you guys.
Yeah. I think you're talking maximum about, you know, 20 people.
But, you know, you're dealing with people, that's kind of a good thing, though, because then you're dealing with people you know you trust.
Yep.
And that's probably the positive thing about it.
No of them.
You know, you're not dealing with people who might be involved for, you know, reasons that might not be
good ones. Not all of them.
Not all of them.
No.
Okay.
But, yeah, I know who I trust, and I know where I'm going. Actually, on top of it at the moment, I'm writing really well. I may be kind of a bit flaky, but...
But you're a musician!
Yeah.
You're supposed to be. Isn't that the way it works?
No. Anyway, my cleaner came in. She's South African. She said, you are so fucking together, I don't believe it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, everywhere I go, it's all taken care of.
Right.
All I've got to do is clean it.
Right.
And he said, I've never seen a single man like this before. Yeah. I said, oh, that's very nice. Yeah.
It's a compliment.
It's a very nice compliment.
Yeah, very nice.
He just said, I've never seen anyone so fucking together.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's good to hear.
Well, you know, I like it.
Yeah, it's better than being. I
keep a clean house.
Okay.
I've got a big house, and it's, you know, humongous sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, she seemed pretty pleased with it.
Good. I heard an album the other day. I want to just mention this that was sent to me by Rick, actually. From Martin Darvill, who's the person who's really, you know, set up this interview and is very involved with you, and that's called The Greatest Show on Earth.
Yeah.
I know you were involved with that album.
Yeah, for about 15 seconds.
Yeah, but your vocals are on it. I mean, Martin did an incredible job on that album. That album actually blew me away.
Oh, good. I'm very pleased.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy, too.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I was involved for about 15 seconds.
Okay.
You know, I didn't really do much on that call.
Okay. But we heard your voice.
15 seconds.
But 15 seconds is still good.
Yeah.
John, I'm going to ask you a hard question. We're getting towards the end here. This is a hard one for you, I think. Because you've, again, who is your favorite drummer you've ever played with?
Simon Phillips.
Favorite drummer?
Simon Phillips.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear you say it the first time. Simon Phillips. Okay. I get that answer a lot. Okay.
I bet you do.
Yeah, I get that answer a lot. That people for people talking about who their favorite drummer is. Simon Phillips. Okay.
I mean, if he was here now, I'd kiss him.
Okay.
He's lovely.
I thought maybe you might say Bill.
No, Simon Phillips.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good answer. There's another question for you. What type of music do you like to listen to? In your spare time, when you have some time to yourself?
Always classical.
You're a classical person?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am. Well, I mean, okay, I'm in the kitchen now. So what I listen to is when I'm doing the washing up.
Okay.
And I just got and it feels good. There's a singer from Asia.
Okay.
Sorry, ABBA.
Okay, yeah, sure.
You know her?
Uh-huh, yeah. ABBA, sure.
I got some weird shit as well. Genius.
Yeah. Just interesting. A lot of the musicians I interviewed, I speak to, when they say, "What do you listen to your class time? You know, in your spare time?" It's classical.
Well, I think most of us use that to get away from, to get inspiration from, and B, get away from rock.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly what I do. Yeah. I would say, okay, Mahler's Fifth.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I got one more really hard question for you.
Which is,
if we sit here and we list all the amazing musicians you've played with over the years, we probably could be here all day. Is there anyone that you haven't played with or been involved in a project with that you would really love to be?
No.
I think you've played with everybody.
To be honest, I've done everything I wanted to do.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, all I do now is come down in the morning, have a cup of tea, and sit down at my piano.
Yeah.
And by July, I'll have the best part of an album. I'll have an album. Yeah.
Do you realize, again, someone who's been in the music business as long as you have, and how much great music that you've made? I mean, do you even realize? Can you look back now? You know, and not that you're finished, because you're far from finished, and really realize the impact and how much your music has touched so many people?
I have no idea.
Because it's probably amazing. I mean, if you're sitting to just think about it, it's just amazing. Again, through Asia, King Crimson, UK, I mean, we can sit here all day and talk about how much great music you've made and how much it's touched so many people.
Well, I think that's lovely. You know, all I want to do is do some more, you know.
Sounds good.
If people tell me how good Starless was, you know, Red,
right,
you know, 25 years ago,
right,
then I have to say, well, listen to Rock of Faith, because that's even better, you know.
Right.
And the next one is going to be even better, too. The next one is going to have the most beautiful, beautiful classical opening, followed by the guitar sound from The Devil's Bottom.
So now,
and I am really looking forward to that.
I think we will be too. I think that we will be too, now that you mention that.
He's gonna kill it.
Good.
I'm not talking about the devil, I'm talking about my guitar player.
Okay. Could you do me one last favor before I let you go? Could you do a station ID for us?
Sure.
Okay, hold on a second. I just got to adjust my thing. Okay, can you just say, this is John Wetton, and you're listening to Delicious Agony, Progressive Rock Radio. Whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is John Wetton. You're listening to Delicious Agony. Sorry. I'm going to have to write this down.
It's okay. You know how many people have messed this up?
What's that?
Yes, do you know how many people have messed up these IDs? You have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't even
I'm
know.
I'm normally pretty good at this.
I interviewed John Anderson about it 2 months ago. I don't even know what he said. I couldn't get him to say it. He called us something else, but that's okay. It's Delicious Agony Progressive Rock Radio. Whenever you're ready.
Wait a minute.
whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is John Whitten. You're listening to Delicious Agony, Progressive Rock Radio.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Yep. John, that's absolutely perfect. You nailed it. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Oh, no, my pleasure.
And, you know, we're really looking forward to, obviously, it's a treat for us to speak to you, and we can't wait to hear the new album when it comes out.
Yep, it'll be called The Eighth Ring.
Okay.
And I'll tell you when the Devil's Bottom explodes.
Okay, we'll be looking for that.
you'll get it.
Okay. Well, thanks, John. Thanks so much, and take care.
Cheers.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.